So kidney out is one of these issues that there is a mix between halakha, minhag, and I think, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it sociology. At the end of the day, sociology is going to win. But let me back up and give a little bit more of an introduction, and then we'll hopefully understand the topic properly. I gave a shiur on this on Shabbat, and before I started, one guy gets up and he says, a guy who was a career officer in the most elite unit of the army, he says, Tia gever, you know, tavilanu heter, maspikfar. And that's the Israeli attitude. Do I need to translate that? No. And this is going on for years and years. So until a rabbi can get up and say, no, this is all mutar, kol beseder, so people will not stop. Now, the reason for this is that there's a perception. And the perception is that the minhag of kidneyot somehow spontaneously combusted, just appeared one day, has no basis whatsoever in halacha, and is something which we would all be better off getting rid of. And I think that that whole perception is partially true, and at least partially not true. And before I begin, I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen over the next number of years, and then we'll actually start to look at the sources. One thing which is interesting is that it bothers people so much, and I know exactly why it bothers people. It bothers people because I can be religious, I can be orthodox, I can be ultra-orthodox, and how is it fair that somebody who is from a different custom or different edah, how can it be that they can eat it and I can't eat it? Which means, when I lived in America, which was admittedly a long time ago, over 30 years ago, we moved here, and I don't remember people being as upset about it for a very simple reason, because most people in the communities that we lived in didn't eat it. So it was just, it's like people were not upset about all kinds of other heter. Now, what I just now said is not fair, because, again, I can't compare it to milk and meat, to a cheeseburger. Like, I don't remember people coming to shul every week, you better find us a heter for this, or every year. You know, zelo beseder, you have to find a heter. Because people understood that that's something which is most likely a Torah law. I say most likely. Quick together, not placed on one another, but let's just call it a Torah law. So people, that doesn't bother them. But by the way, they could say, what's this thing about chicken and milk? Why nobody ever got all excited about that? And that's most certainly not a Torah law. Why about waiting 6 hours? Other little, you know, things, but that doesn't. But this is what bothers people, and I have to say, I think it bothers people because if all of us couldn't do it, so then it would be okay. But that some people can do it, that's what bothers. Now, the easiest way to allow kidneyot for Ashkenazim will be to deny their identity as Ashkenazim. That's the easiest way. Is to say that now that they moved to Israel, there's something else. Now, I've heard people say that. Oh, I moved to Israel and I've left this diaspora custom behind. And I just find that somewhat amusing. Yes, you could say that when I move here, I want to be a Sephardi, but that also, I hope you realize, has some kulot and some chumro, which means, okay, so you want to follow the Beit Yosef, so you have to start eating only halak. Right? A lot of the meat here you just can't eat anymore. And I've never heard anybody, I want to be more careful, most of the people who I've heard or read about them saying, no, I've decided to stop keeping kidney out because minhag makom, whatever, they just don't bother following the minhag makom and other things, so I find that to be somewhat disingenuous. What I do think will happen, though, is that there will be an increasing amount of people who are not necessarily individuals who go and ask questions in halacha, who just decide that we no longer keep that custom, and therefore you'll have, I don't want to call a bottom because that's really very judgmental, but I call it anyway, a bottom of 10, 15, 20% of people who will stop doing it. And then you can have the other more complicated issue, and that's questions of intermarriage. I don't mean intermarriage in the way we mean it in some places, but where you have blended families of Ashkenazim and Sephardim, which is so common. And that's really the issue that's going to end up happening, is where things get more complicated. So if I have two married children right now, and one is married to somebody who's an Ashkenaziyah, and the other's married to somebody who's a Sephardiyah, so just things get complicated when they want to go eat in her house, so that things become more complicated. And that's the second area where things are going to start somewhat falling apart, and I personally predict within another generation most Ashkenazim will no longer be keeping it. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, but let's at least now learn the background for it. We'll start with the first source, which says the Mishnah. Elu dvarim she'adam yotzei behem yidei chovato bepesach, b'chitim, b'sarim, b'kosmim, u'v'shifon, u'v'shibolet shoal. These are the things that a person can fulfill their commandment for matzah. So here's the secret. Matzah and chametz are two sides of the same coin. A matter of fact, almost every time it says in the Torah one, the other one will be either in the same pasuk or the next pasuk. They always come together. Matzah and chametz go together because you cannot be one unless you have the potential to be the other. That's just as simple as a rule as it goes. The thing with kitniot is that, of course, the board kitniot are things that cannot become matzah. And if kitniot cannot become matzah, then they cannot become chametz. That's, I want to say that as simply and as straightforward as possible, kitniot cannot become chametz. And if it cannot become chametz, so if anybody says that you must sell your kitniot, or you must, you know, burn your kitniot, or you must whatever, you cannot have your kitniot in your house, all that is an absolute falsehood. Even according to the most stringent Ashkenazic custom, nobody has said that kitniot is chametz. All that they have said is that because kitniot is something where, and here's where the intrigue will come in, let's leave that blank right now, we will not eat kitniot. So therefore the custom is not to eat it, but the custom has nothing to do with not owning it. And again, just let me remind you, there's two different isurim on Pesach regarding chametz. One isur is to own chametz, and the other isur is to eat chametz. So as far as owning chametz goes, no one has ever said that you can't own it. The only thing that we've ever find people saying is that our custom is not to eat it. That's as far as it goes. And by the way, already in the classical sources, and I say the Ramah, he's probably going to be one of the most classical sources, we're going to find that there are all kinds of situations for leniency. So that's also something which I want to say. It's that our custom is, let me put it this way, all things being equal, our custom is not to eat it. But now, how often, in terms of the real world, are all things necessarily equal? Okay, so let's now continue. The Gemara then, in the second line, Hani in, these things, yes, Orez v'dochen, lo. But Orez, and I just want to focus on Orez now, Orez, we would assume, is rice. It's a pretty good assumption, although one always has to be careful in rabbinic terminology when we have certain things, unless we know 100% that's what it is, we'll assume that's what it is, but terms change over time, and sometimes people assume that they're the same. So, Minoni Mile, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, V'chein Tana Debei Rabbi Yishmael, V'chein Tana Debei Rabbi Loz ben Yaakov, Amar Kra, Lo Tuchal Alav Chametz, Shivat Yamim Tuchal Alav Matzot. Okay, classical verse, don't eat chametz, eat matzot, two sides of the same coin. Dvarim Habayim L'dei Chimutz, Adam Yotzei Behem Yidei Chovato B'Matzah. Only things that one has the potential to be chametz, can one fulfill their obligation of matzah. Yotzu Eile She'en B'Ledei Chimutz El'Ledei Sirachon. Other things which do not become chametz, and they become instead sirachon. What sirachon means, literally means it's spoiled. So over here, again, you have a value judgment to the Gemara. Certain things become chametz, certain things become spoiled. Matnitan deloka Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. This Mishnah is not according to the opinion of Yochanan Menuri de Amar, Orez Minda Ganhu, who says that Orez is really one of the five species of grain. V'chayavina lev chimotzo karet. And if somebody has Orez in their house, or Orez, they eat the Orez, so over here Orez will render a person guilty. By the way, then according to him, one can also make some kind of rice cakes and have matzah out of them, because he believes that's one of the five grains. So again, the issue of what the five grains are is also far more complicated than you would imagine. There are types of oats, just for example, that people have celiac can eat. Yes? Nobody here have celiac, yes? People have celiac, there's certain kinds of oats that they can eat. Now, by definition, these things have the same kind of makeup, one would suspect that oats should have the same kind of makeup, and somebody who can't eat grains should not be able to eat it. So that's already raised some kind of a question. There was Professor Felix who therefore wanted to claim that it is not one of the five species, and others said, no, you can't use these kind of scientific criteria in order to figure out what the five species are. But I'll say it again. Five species is more complicated than we'd imagine. And when the Rambam discusses the five species, he says there's actually the five break into only two categories. There's only really two categories of grains, which then fall into five categories. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri believed that rice was one of them. So one of the approaches that people take when they want to allow kidney out, they say this is diaspora custom. And in Eretz Yisrael, nobody ever imagined such a thing. Well, guess what? Rav Yochanan ben Nuri lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri was probably the rabbi of a town. And probably the people who lived in Rav Yochanan ben Nuri's town never ate rice on Pesach. So I'm just pointing out that the custom of not eating rice may go, or considering even more so, this is even more extreme, the custom of considering rice to be potentially chametz goes all the way back to the time of the Gemara, goes all the way back to the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. And as I said, that most likely would be a surprise for many people, because we just imagine that this just emerged at some point, which was much, much later in time. Okay. Most of the people who have written about kidneyout will accuse the person who made this up to be a book which is called the Smak. The Smak is source number 4, Sefer Mitzvot Katan. Rav Yitzchak Ben Yosef of Korbil. You can see his dates there, 1210 to 1280. He himself is the son-in-law of one of the more famous Ba'alei HaTosfot, Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, Rabbi Yechiel mi Paris. And his primary student was a man named Rabbeinu Peretz, who wrote notes on this Sefer Mitzvot Katan. Now, before I go any further, this book had enormous influence, because as opposed to most of the writings of the Tosfot school, which was Tosfot, I hope that didn't sound completely circular, but most of what the Tosfot school did was Tosfot. And the Tosfot school is quite what we would call today dialectic in approach, let's just put it this way. What Rashi did is he explains every single line of the Talmud till he passed away. In the middle of Baba Batra, you have a note on the Gemara. Rashi died right here, and his grandson, the Rashbam, takes over at that particular page. But Rashi essentially opened up the Talmud for people, because the Talmud is written in a different language. It's for the most part written in Aramaic. And there's all kinds of terms and phrases and ideas which we're not necessarily familiar with. And the difference between learning the Gemara before Rashi and after Rashi is absolutely startling how different it is. So what Rashi did is he opens up the Gemara for us. So now with Gemara and Rashi, I can understand every single line. But that's looking at things, let's just put it this way, on surface level. What Tosfot did is lifted up to, let's say, Rashi is explaining every single tree in the forest. Tosfot is over on top in a helicopter, and he sees the whole forest. And then what Tosfot does is saying, hold it, this Gemara over here, how does it reconcile itself with this passage over there? So while Rashi is on surface level explaining line by line, Tosfot is looking at things, trying to reconcile one passage to the other, and then more often than not, putting forth a dialectic approach, which means showing, no, this is talking about this kind of case, and this is talking about this kind of case, and therefore making sharp distinctions between the two. It's very likely, by the way, that the Ramban, who is not in the area of Tosfot, that at least two of his teachers may have been trained by Tosfot, when I say the larger school of Tosfot, and therefore he may have been influenced by the same type of approach, which goes into the Sephardic lines as well. When we look at the Smak, the Smak is Sefer Mitzvot Ketanot, which is in a certain sense based upon the Smag, which is Sefer Mitzvot Gedolot. The difference is that the Smak only includes within his book things which are very practical, things which are applied today, and he writes it in a very, very simple language. By the way, incidentally, the Smag is one of the few instances where the information from the lands of the Sephardim came towards the Ashkenaz. But what I mean by that is the Smag used the Rambam to turn things back into Hebrew. the Rambam, in the whole Rambam, what he does in the Mishnah Torah, he writes it in beautiful, clear Hebrew. Somebody who has a hard time learning Gemara, you know, sometimes because of the words and skills, sometimes ideas. I don't know. I mean, you can cheat in a couple of different ways, but one way is just you learn a lot of Mishnayot, because it's, again, mostly Hebrew. Much, much more accessible. Learn the Rambam, because the Rambam is completely in Hebrew. But the Rambam then, in a certain sense, explains the same way that Rashi does, but there's a big difference. Because the Rambam then makes the law out of it, but along the way, you could take the Rambam. Right, this would be an enormous enterprise. Take the Rambam and then break it up line by line in the Gemara and show how the Rambam translated the Gemara and then explained it into Hebrew. That's what the Smag did. He used the Rambam to go back and to explain the words. Not that he always agreed with him, but he used the Rambam's translation. It's as if for somebody today to say, you know what, where will I find a translation of the Gemara? So I'll go to, I don't know, I'll go to Steinsaltz, I'll go to the Art Scroll, and I'm going to use their translation, and then I'm going to use it for all kinds of other purposes. So the Smag doesn't rule like the Rambam, but he uses the Rambam's language. The Smag then goes and breaks things down in a simpler way. Again, the dialectics of Tosfot is not here. He writes a popular book, and then he does marketing, and he sends the books all over. So the book is going to be immensely, immensely popular. And if you would ask me, it could well be that one of the reasons that the custom of Kitniot spreads all over the place could very well be because of the spread of the smock. But before I get to the smock, no printing press yet. We're hundreds of years still before. Had people copy it. People come.
Because you really wanted it without a common thing to do. That sounds like it's
yes. And he tells men to read it. He tells women to read it. He tells women they should learn the halachot, which is interesting. When if you go to the laws in the Shulchan Aruch, where it talks about women learning Torah, it says that women should learn the Torah. The laws are certainly ones that apply to them. And then it says, parentheses, smak. I mean, he told everyone to be reading his book because everybody copied it along the way. They're all kinds of intrigues regarding the text. He told people they can go into a town, copy it, and then they can take money from the Kupat Tzedakah to pay themselves for their time and leave the copy over there. And again, all kinds of things, but he was very interested in the book getting all over, as opposed to Tosfot, which, as I said, is much more dialectical and much more intellectual and for the scholar. This was for the masses. Now, before I read the Smach, we can push things back a little bit. Again, just noting the dates, the Smach is 1210 to 1280, and his student, Rabbi Peretz, dies 1295. In source number 3, we have the dates of Rabbi Lezer Vermeiza, better known by the book that he wrote, which is the Rokeach, and he lives in 1165, which means that we just now, born 1165, dies 1240, which means we just now jumped back, I won't say a whole century, but half a century. And recently, when I say recently, during the last, depends what year we're in right now, during the last 15 years or so, there was a man named Rabbi, or professor, Simcha Emanuel. Simcha actually was, when I learned in Gush, he was there. He's a professor in Hebrew U. And he found a drasha of the Rokeach. And in this drasha, there is this wonderful one line. Actually, I just went to the library to try to find it, that I could actually get a picture of it. But this is the line he writes. Uma she'ein ochlim fulin va'adashim, that which we don't eat. Fulin va'adashim are? Yes? Right. Lentils and lentils. Mipnei she'yesh ben chitim, because wheat is mixed into it. But by the way, just notice how he says it. That which we don't does not sound like anything new. It sounds like it's something which is old. He goes, that which we don't do it, and here we have, as far as I know, other than what I already told you from the Gemara of Yochanan ben Nuri, who's of the opinion that rice is actually one of the grains, here we have the earliest source. So as I said, most books that you look and to read about Kitniot will not have had this, because they would have been published beforehand, or didn't have access to this, even if they were published afterwards. So this now is the first source. His reasoning is interesting. In the footnote to the work that he published, Simcha Emanuel, and by the way, there's a beautiful introduction there as well to the book where he writes about his father surviving a concentration camp, and leave that for now. But in his footnote, he makes a suggestion. And his suggestion is based upon, I'll give you if you need to know the names, it's based upon somebody named Lynn White. There were others as well. But Lynn White claimed that in Ashkenaz, because again, he lives in Germany, in Ashkenaz, during that time period, they stopped using a two-field system and started using a three-field system. So let me explain. In those days, generally, they would plant twice a year. I can't tell you exactly. You can ask somebody who knows or studies these things, but they would plant twice a year, and you would have two crops a year of wheat. At some point, they started a third crop during the year. The third crop would be in between the two, because they saw they can plant once, they can plant a second time, but then they realized they can plant other kinds of things in the middle, and the other things that they would plant would actually help the field, because it would give it certain nutrients. And what would they plant in between? Kidney. Because the kidney oat is what they found could grow during that medium time. So therefore, when you read this line here, that's exactly what he was saying. It says, no, we don't eat ful in Vandashim because there's chitim there. It sounds very much what he's telling you is a question of the mitziut. This is the reality. The reality is such. Which therefore, he then goes to a theory that it's possible that in Ashkenaz, where they were using a three-field system, the minhag of kidney oat begins, where in certain other countries that they did not have a three-field system, they were only planting it twice a year, there was not a custom of kidney oat because just simply the reality was different. If you grow your kidney oat in your wheat field, guess what's going to happen? You're going to have kidney oat. And by the way, all the way till right now, current times, when canola first began popular, and I'll come back to canola hopefully before we finish today, but when canola first became popular, so I looked into it and I started to research what it is. You know what canola is? Canola is Canadian oil. The reason they call it Canadian oil, they don't call it what it is because it's grown from something which is called a rapeseed. Now that's not the best marketing thing that you ever want to call something. And they instead try to call it Canadian oil canola. Now, over the years, rapeseeds were never eaten because there's nothing to eat. They would make oil out of it, which is used literally for fuel. It was fuel oil and not for human consumption. As I said, I'm going to come back to a lot of this. And then when it suddenly hits the market as this canola oil, so I start to look into it. And one of the things I find out is that in a lot of places, till today, including today, the rapeseed is grown for the exact same reason in wheat fields in order to give nutrients to the field in order for the wheat to grow better. I mean, and this is absolutely the situation today. So if somebody does want to use canola oil for Pesach, I personally believe it absolutely needs to have a kosher Pesach hechsher on it. And most likely we'll say la'ochle kidney oat or whatever. But as I said, I'm getting way ahead of myself. But that mitziyut of growing things in wheat fields because they thought it helps the wheat field is still done today with rapeseed as well. But the problem is when pieces of the wheat end up being processed together with it, and then you end up having, right, and then you end up having the chametz with it. So that's more or less the problem. So as I said, getting way ahead of myself, in the collected writings of Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, where he has a review essay of Professor Zimmer, who was one of my teachers at some point many, many years ago, where he generally likes it, and at the very end, he goes into this whole diatribe against Emmanuel, which I can't imagine why he's including them together, other than the possible reason that Simcha Emmanuel is Professor Zimmer's son-in-law, which he doesn't mention there along the way. And he says that he himself had years ago looked into the... I'll read his last... Finally, the issue is complicated by broadcast sowing, and he gives the French phrase, mentioned by Robert Fossier, legumes, because of their nitrogen-fixing ability, made the earth more fertile. Seeds of leguminous vegetables, peas and beans, for example, would be scattered over the cereal crops, especially barley, and the crops would be harvested together. Kernels of grains were thus interspersed with those peas and beans. They were subsequently separated, however, no one could be certain that the division had been absolute. Thus, legumes always carried in danger of a cereal admixture, and one cannot fix any particular date when broadcast sowing first began or became widespread. In brief, the spread of the three-field system unquestionably played a role in the kidney oat ban, but how large a role is difficult to say. So he is a little bit more careful, and he here says that he had private communication with Robert Fossier, October 16th and November 11th, 1998. and the whole botanical side of things. But as I said, that could well be. But what's interesting with all this is that, as I said, we just now push things back at least another century. But more, when I say at least another century, because one would have to go back and find out when they started in the three-field system, which some claim can go all the way back perhaps to the 800s or 900s in Germany. So that's essentially when Ashkenazim get there. So the new mitziyut could be. By the way, you can now tell me, okay, but we don't do this anymore, and I would then answer back, is that really the case? At least in the health food store that my wife buys food, I won't give any more information on that. She asked them years ago, do you have kosher Pesach, this, this, and this? And they said, no, just that's the way that we can't do it, because just everything is together mixed up, and we just, no, we're closed. We can't do kosher Pesach. So this problem may be more of a problem than we imagine, but as I said, there may actually be a reason for it. Now, let's move over to the smock, because the smock gives a completely different reason. First introduction to the smock I already gave you. Second introduction to the smock is, it may not be in the smock, which means, I think the smock said it, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that in a moment, but it may not be in the smock, and this goes down to the way that it was copied. It may have instead been added by his student, Rabbeinu Peretz. In our editions of the smock, it's not there, but it is added by his student. And again, Rabbeinu Peretz is still one of the Baalei Tosfot. Let's read source number 4. The alakitniot could go in fuyish ufuli v'rice or rish v'adashem u'kiyotzi behem rabotenu nogim behem isur shelo lochum b'pesach klal. Notice he said, rabotenu nohagim. He's not saying that I've made this up or this is my idea. Rabotenu nohagim. Not to eat them at all. V'chein nira k'midom sheshamati alafulim shelo levashu b'pesach ki'im b'mayim rotchim mitchilet nitina b'kedera v'gdolim. And here you have an early use of gedolim in terms of great rabbis. Ugdolim nogim beheter. Umori Rabbeinu Yechiel haya nohig lecho bePesach ful halavan. And my teacher. So it's interesting because if this is a note from Rabbeinu Peretz, but really the teacher of Rabbeinu Peretz was the smock. The teacher of the smock was Rabbi Chiyom B'Periz, which sounds like the note may be by Rabbeinu Peretz, but he's telling us what the smock actually said. And he's saying, but my teacher, Rabbeinu Yechiel, hayanoheg le'echo b'pesach ful lavan. He goes, he would eat this. By the way, this doesn't tell you that Rabbi Chiyom B'Periz ate everything, but at least ful lavan, he thought, was okay. V'gam hayaomer ken b'shem gedolim, and he would say this in the name of others as well. So we have, at least among the Baalei HaTosfot, a division. Some of them felt that it was fine, and some felt that it was not. And his proof was, or his argument was, you know, this goes back to our rice and Rav Yochum and Nuri. Some people wouldn't eat it, or Rav Yochum and Nuri claimed that was actually really could become chametz. No, we are not concerned of Yochum and Nuri, which means Yochum and Nuri's opinion that rice could really be chametz, we don't follow, and that's what he's saying over from Ibchiu Miparis. Miu kosha deva ma'od lahatir, davar shenogin bo ha'olam isr mimei chachamim hakadmonim. Nonetheless, it is very difficult for me to allow something which has been prohibited from the rabbis, early rabbis. So right here, the evidence of the smock, and I'll say again, both, and the evidence that we saw from the Rokeach, both of them tell us that we're dealing with an early prohibition. He goes, but it's not because they thought that the kitniot was chametz. Because how could people make a mistake that a kid in, you know, elementary school would know? Because as we saw in the beginning of the Mishnah, only the five minim can possibly become chametz, so the kitniot can't become chametz. And therefore, you know, let's explain where this minhag comes from. Ulasur kol kitniot bePesach v'lo machmad chimutz atzmo ki ta'utu lo merkein ela mitam gzeira. Now he, this is very important. He's telling us, and this is again one of the earliest sources, for years thought the earliest source, telling us it's not a minhag, it's a gzeira. Gzeirahu dekeven tekitniot ma'aseh kederahu v'doganami ma'aseh kederahu kedaisa. And he's telling us the problem is that people will confuse it when they make it in the pot. Which means he's telling us, again, completely different from what we saw in Rabbi Elazar ben Vermaisa. Rabbi Elazar ben Vermaisa said, what? Because of the it grows together. And we suspected maybe it was because they actually planted it together, which, as we said, is a very good suggestion. He's giving us a different reason. He's saying is that when you cook it in a pot, kitni, it will end up looking very much like chametz. Yihavi sharin kitniyot ulay ati la'achlufei ula hetir daisa. And if we allow the kitniyot to be cooked in a pot, people will get confused, and people will allow daisa. It's as if saying, you know, we can't have chicken and milk because people will get confused and think that you can have veal and milk because it looks very similar when it's raw, and therefore this is a gezeirah. Kevin to aidi v'aidi ma'ase kederehu v'gam midid midgan hu kamo chamisha taminim kedita perik asochar topolim v'gam yish makamot shrugim lasot mehem pat kamo chamisha taminim l'chein oti l'chlufei loton she'enu b'nei Torah. People that are not scholars will get confused because people can make bread out of this as well. You're going to have bread. By the way, it's very interesting today when you look at virtually all the restaurants in Israel have these things that really look like bread and it's all over the place. And he's saying, no, you can't do this. Again, I'm not going to add more Yisurim, but if somebody were to say, and there have been people who would say, no, that's really not right to do on Pesach, to make things that look like bread because people will get confused. Now you realize that may well have been the reason or the rationale from the very beginning for the prohibition of kitniyah, but it's interesting because people are not bnei Torah. But lo dami lamini yerakot kagon kruv v'kwashinu kiyotzim dehanu lo dami klal l'dagan. It's not like vegetables that people won't get confused at all. V'lo ati l'chlufei u'minav hagun hu lizaher mikol kitniyot kidipirashti. And it's the proper custom to do this. V'afilu michardal mishim dehavimini demidgan afal pi detamun asheri orez zehu dafke b'yemehem sheyu kulam bikiyim v'chot yisur v'heter aval achshav b'dorot achronot v'ada yesh l'gzor kidipirashti. Now if you notice, he keeps going back and forth. Half the time he calls it a minhag, and half the time he calls it a gzeirah. Would it make a difference between the two? Yeah, it would make a difference. The word gzeirah is much stronger than the word minhag, but he does go back and forth. Okay. Next is the Mordechai. The Mordechai was born in 1240, died al Kiddush Hashem in 1298. His wife was the daughter of Ruchiel May Paris. He was a student of the Marami Rutenberg. And one of his other teachers were Rabbeinu Peretz. So here you have all the same names mixed up over here again, and he writes it very, very similar. First he's quoting from the Rambam, and I want to skip a little bit. In the very middle of the page, it's bold, Amnam Gisi, my brother-in-law, Harav Yitzchak Mikorvil. So he's telling us that the Smak himself, Katav B'Sefer Mitzvot HaKatzar. So unless he saw, again, that's what I'm saying, it sounds, even though in our books today it's written, it's there in a note by his student Rabbeinu Peretz, over here he writes that it's really Yitzchak Mikorvil Katav Asher Yasad Nirali Lekayam Minhag Ulasur Kol Kitniyah BePesach VeLo Mitam Chimutz Ki Ta'utu BiAdam Ki Tiparash Ela Mishum Gzeirahu. And most of what he writes over here is going to be similar to what we have already seen. The Tur, you'll like this. The Tur is the son of the Rush. The Rush needs to leave Germany and move over to Spain. His son, the Tur, Rav Yaakov ben Asher, born in Cologne, 1269, he moves to Toledo. V'yesh osrim l'chol orez v'chol minei kitniyot b'tavshir l'fi sh'minei chitim mit'arvin bahen. Notice which explanation he gave. He went back to the explanation that we had now seen in the Rokeach, by Elazar ben Vermaisa. V'chumra yeterahi zu b'lo nagukein. And this is, it's excessive, and this is not the custom. So again, we have to, here's a man who lives most of his life in Spain. Again, is the mitziut simply different over here? Do things grown differently over there? It's certainly not the custom over there. And he says, this is excessive and it's not the custom. So we now see among people influenced by the Tosfot school, Rav Chaim Paris would eat some. Right, full lavan we saw he would eat. On the other hand, we find the Smak saying, no, this has been the custom for a while. One of the earlier members of Tosfot, the Rokeach, he tells us, we don't eat this. Rav Elazar the Rokeach, he has many customs which where he's very strict, many Kabbalistic things. He's what's known as the original Hasid, in the Hasidei Ashkenaz. So is this an excessive custom of somebody who's extreme, or is this something which is the norm? The way he's saying it in his drasha for Shabbat HaGadol doesn't sound like he's writing to an extreme. Sounds like that's what he's saying to his community. We don't do this, which again does lead us to believe it is somewhat of the custom. The Beit Yosef, V'yeshosim l'chol orez v'chol nekitniyot v'chumri yitei rehuizu, gam Rabbeinu Yerucham katav otam shenagu v'shol l'chol orez v'mini pe'im v'shav v'pesach minag shtutu, zulti'im him osim l'achmir l'atzman v'lo yedati lama. Again, we find people saying this is excessive and this is silly. Uvagot mamoni od perikei, Katav b'shem Smak. Again, we have another person writing in the name of the Smak, which, by the way, we may have at least three at this point, including Rabbeinu Peretz, including the Mordechai, and including the Hagot Mamoniot. Alakitniot kagon fulim v'adashim yeshlong yisur lachlom b'pesach. Kolza b'shem Smak v'leit techash l'dram alalu zulat ha'ashkenazim. And nobody pays attention to this except for who? Ashkenazim. So that's the Beit Yosef, again, a clearly Sephardic approach. Yeah. The Maharil, who may be the most important posek for early Ashkenaz custom, source 8, again, his dates 1360 to 1427. He lives in Mainz, which is Vermeiza, which is where the Rokeach lived, which may actually explain some of the strictness we're about to see. Kitniot kolminayim oma maharish de garzinen, notice gzeira, shalom levashlam bepesach, afopi shalom achmitzim, kihem michamishat meminim, chitim sor makusim shibot shual vashifon, that it's not one of the five grains. Mikol makom gazru, notice again, gzeira, gazru, kolminay kitniot otuhema, va'al yomar adam, kevin shain isur midaraita in lachosh, a person shouldn't start. You already see in his day. Don't start telling me it's not so strict. To call the gazur abanan ha'over alav chayev mita, va'over alot asur min adavar she'arucha. So he's pulling out all the heavy guilt and anything else he can by saying, no, this is a bona fide gzera. V'gam ein lomar min hagkan lehatir de minag ta'utu, and don't say it's a mistake. He's obviously have heard people who've claimed the otherwise. Oh no, remember, except for the Ashkenazim, this is an Ashkenazi custom. To dafkal davar heter gamur v'yesh makot shenogim bo isur elze yachol lomar buken. I'm not going to read the rest of it, but he's really quite severe in terms of anybody who thinks that there is a heter in this. It's a good question. A minhag could be a family custom, could be a local custom. Gzeira would imply that somebody actually got up and forbade something, said this is not allowed. So it's much stronger than a minhag.
That's
another minhag. How, again, and this also amuses me, all the people that want to get rid of Kenyon. What about the Rabbi Zeira reporting, Nagu Bat Yisrael, Lachmir Latzmam, 5 days or so? That sounds like it's a minhag. And I mentioned this the other day, and there were a couple of women that said, no, we'd machpatlan, we want kitniyot. that's what we want. Lochpatlanu. So nagu b'nai Yisrael lachmir atzman. Midoraita, a woman who's in nida, counts 7 days. As long as she stopped before, then she goes to mikvah. So that's certainly based. There may be dindra, but there may be gzera dindra banan. There may be, but it sounds like a minhag as well is built into it, but without getting into all the details. Tov, the only question is how much more detail we should get into over here. I do want to look at 13. He doesn't say that. And, you know, one of the biggest differences between the Beit Yosef, the Mechaber, Yosef Karo, and between the Ramah is the Beit Yosef tries not to let local custom bother him all that much. And he says, we follow, there's so many customs, so many opinions, so many this, we follow a conglomeration of the Rif, the Rush, and the Rambam, which is completely unfair for Ashkenazim, because the Rif and the Rambam were Sfaradim, and the Rush moves from Germany to Sfarad, so your three great poskim are going to be ones which will have a Sfaradic bent to them, and the Rambam very often will just respond, but our custom is so-and-so. Machbatli, what you came up with. This is what our custom is. So the Maharil is telling you what our custom is, but it's stronger over here in this case. Of course, he uses the word gezeira. If we look at source number 13, here, before 13, look at the Aruch HaShulchan. I'm getting like way ahead of myself. 11, the Isser Zeh Kivan Shekiblu Avotenu Mishum Geder Midin Torah Asur Lanu Levatel V'Mifak Pekim V'Hamekilim B'Zeh Mi'idim Alatzman She'im B'Am Yiret Shemayim V'Yiret Chet V'Im B'Kim B'Derkei HaTorah. That's the Aruch HaShulchan's take on anybody who wants to be Mekel and Kitniot, that they are attesting their lack of Yiret Shemayim, their lack of understanding how Torah works. And that's very, very strong. I read that the Chatam Sofer is in 12, that one of the first anti-reform positions that were taken by the Chatam Sofer was a defense of the Minhag of Kitniot, and that was one of the first things that the reform also tried to get rid of. You know, we don't need excessive customs and so on. Source 12 of the Chatam Sofer, filum ye tam leheter mikol makam haynu bekibbutz kol o rov chachmei anshei medinat Ashkenaz asher hin kiblu alem gzeira miikara. You want to be lenient, then you need all the, you have to get together all the rabbis of Ashkenaz to undo what they had done. Which, of course, is fascinating. When did all the rabbis of Ashkenaz get together? Does Rav Chi of Paris know that they all got together? I mean, it sounds much more like something spontaneous. Even though they're claiming Gzeira, he's paying attention to the term Gzeira, which is why he is being so strict. Let's look at 13 now. By the way, Source 10, I'm sorry, I keep going backwards. The Tshuva Me'ava, he's a student of the Noda Yehuda, and he later becomes rabbi of Prague. Afam ye kantsun beit din shel Shmuel haramati ve'eliyahu beitino v'kol do Yisrael afimam linit ati ein be'adam latir oiz min ha'kitni apa Pesach. Sort of like responding, where the Chatam Sofer says, you have to get all the rabbis together to agree, and he says, yeah, even get Eliyahu HaNavi there, and they're not being makel on this. So you can see how strong certain people felt about this, that... By the way, I didn't even quote this when I spoke on Shabbat. I told you, people said to me, "Tia geviv latir." I said, "Ech ani yachol latir? Ech ani yachol latir?" When you read the attitude of the Ashkenazi poskim towards this, and again, I'll say it: the first ones who want to get rid of this were the get rid of it. There were some who never accepted it. The ones who wanted to get rid of it was the Reform, and so on. So that's very interesting. That's what we need to be very careful when we read the sources. Very good. Source 13, the Shulchan Aruch. Eil drum sheyotzim behem yidei chovat matzah, b'chitim uv'sa'orim uv'kusmim uv'shivot shu'al uv'shifon v'minag likach l'chi l'chitim. Just in case you're wondering why most of our matzahs are for chitim, that's the custom we're told. Again, somebody has celiac, very good idea that they can get matzahs from oat, because you can get oat matzah without any gluten in them. Aval lo ba'orez v'shar minei kitniot. Which means you can't make matzah out of rice. Why? As we've seen a number of times. Because it can't become chametz, so it can't become matzah. But you'll have to make rice on Pesach, says Rabbi Yosef Karo. Haga. By the way, I did come across all kinds of Sfaradim who were mekel, who were machmer not to use rice, including saying that was the custom of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, it just depends which century you're looking. V'yesh osrim. The Rama here writes, V'yesh osrim. And there are some who don't allow to cook rice. V'minu ba'ashkenaz lahachmir ve'in l'shanot. And the custom in Ashkenaz is lahachmir. Now, of course, if you're clever, you can say, if I ever go to Ashkenaz, I won't have rice. Right? Mi'u poshut de'in osrim b'diavad im naflu tocha tavshil. But b'di'eved, if something fell in, then we are lenient. Now that's a fascinating thing, and I need to explain this. And we're going to begin to see leniencies. But before I explain this, I just want to get to one possible, even a Gemara that may be asur kitniot. Okay, so that's quite surprising because you know where did that come from? So I want to do that first. And then we'll... two different sources. One is the Pri Chadash in 15, and the other is the Vilna Gaon in 14. Pri Chadash from Italy, Rav Chizkiya de Silva Livorno, moves to Yerushalayim, 1656, 1695. So that's a couple of years ago. The Vilna Gaon, who's 1720 to 1797, so that's already afterwards. They both tell us to look in the same place. Look at the Gra in 14, where it's underlined. V'smach leminhag mimasha katav Mem Bet Rosh, sorry. Ayin Shem Betosfot, Rabbi Venira Luri, V'Avshad Dashim. Now, you notice right away, the Gur was very difficult to figure out what in the world he's talking about. Look now at the Pri Chadash in 15. Umatsati lehem smach mehadim rinim aperikol shah. Right, that was the Gur there. He was saying that was the Kol Shah, was one of the Rosh Tevot. Rav Papi Shari Le Liberduke Debe Resh Galuta Lemamacha Kadera Bechasisi Amarava Ika De Shari Kehemilta Beduchta De Shrichi Avdi. Now, you had no idea what any of those words possibly meant. And there's a machloket Rishonim what those words mean. This, by the way, in retrospect, maybe one of the important Gemara, because depending how you understand it, it's either could be the source for an Isser of Kitniot, or it could actually be a source for what's called Gebruchst, or not to have Matzah Shruya. It could be either of those, but look at source 16. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Molalin. Molalin is to thicken something. Now the question is what you use as your thickening agent. So if you have some kind of, yes, you cook, and you want to make it thicker, so what do you do? What's a very good thing to... Flour, right? Cornstarch. Now just think, okay, there's a big difference between those two. One of those would be kitniot, cornstarch, and the other one would be chametz. So, ein molalin, so the little explanation I have over here for you, netinat kemach letavshil kruya milila, by putting flour in something is called milila, it's thickening, that's what it means. Etik dera pesach, so this is one of these shocking things that we should ignore right now. If I take plain flour and I make a matzah ball out of it, and I throw it into boiling water, flour and with egg, and I throw it into boiling water, would that be chametz? So you would all say, of course that would be chametz. The problem is that there's this general understanding that chalita immediately... It's boiling water. It's boiling hot. Immediately it cooks it, so it didn't have enough time to become chametz. What?
Sure.
But you're making your own. You're not using the mix, right?
I'm not using the mix. I'm using like,
yeah, you got to use the mix. They come out great. They're soft and everything.
So fluffy.
Yeah, the mix is great. Anyway, there's a thing called chalita. Chalita means boiling, rapid boiling. According to the Gemara, if you rapidly boil something, it didn't come chametz. Yes. This is just the kind of information that should be in your head, but forget about it. So over here, if I threw something in the pot, it's really hot, so it's not going to become chametz because it's chalita. So over here it says, again, let's try to understand the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Molalin Lateira Pesach, Ula Amar, Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Asur. Mishum, right, because we're careful, like a Nazir is careful to stay far away from Isur. Sechor, Sechor, don't go near grapes, right? Sechor, Sechor, Lekarma, Lo Tikarev. Rav Papi Shari Le Labarduke, he allowed the cooks, Debe Resh Galuta, in the Resh Galuta, Lemimcha Kadera Bechasisi. He allowed them to throw in to the Kadera Chasisi. Now, the question is, what does Chasisi mean? Omer Rav, Ikad Shari, Ki Hai Milta Beduchta de Shechi Avdi. I mean, is this really possible? Ikad Yamri, Rav Gufa Machile Kadera Bechasisi. Some say Rav himself did this. So the question is exactly what this whole Gemara is talking about, and I'm not going into that. Rashi understands it one way, much more in terms of Kemach. Tosfot understood this Gemara differently. Tosfot is 17. Rav Amochu Lebekder Bechasisi. Pirush HaKuntres Kimcha De Vushana. He's talking about more of flour. Vakasha, and he goes, no, that's really difficult to understand that way. Skip to the top of the next line. Venira Luri, again, Ri, one of the classic Balei HaTosfot. Ki deparish ba'arich b'chasisi, the old Talmudic dictionary called the Arich says, chasisi, kemach shel adashim. De'ein dakom levod yichimutz kokach. That kemach of adashim is what they wouldn't let the cooks of the Resh Galuta's house to put in. Why? Because people will get confused. And they'll get confused between adashim and between kemach. And therefore they would not let them thicken up whatever the soup they were making with kemach of adashim, because that can confuse you with kemach real kemach. So if that's this is what the Vilna Gaon said, and this is what the Pri Chodesh both said, that people will get confused, and if people will get confused, here already maybe a Talmudic source, and if you just go back and think about what the Smak said we don't make it because in a pot it looks like daisa, it looks the same, and in our generation when people are not Talmidei Chachamim, people are confused. So that's what the Vilna Gaon and the Pri Chodesh were both saying. This is not a new custom which somehow spontaneously emerged in Europe in the Middle Ages. This is already written in the Gemara, which goes back to the house of the Reish Galuta, where the Chachamei Bavel were telling people, don't thicken up something with kemach made from kintniot, because people will then get confused. So as I said, this may be the first source of a kintniot prohibition, and that's what's claimed by the Pri Chodesh and the Gra. I don't recall anybody saying the opposite. Again, I don't recall saying it. Obviously, that would make sense. But part of the problem is these things sometimes take a life of their own. Now, I want to go back to something that we saw in the Ramah. And ultimately, the Ramah for us is going to be the most important commentary. Why is that? Because that's halacha. And did you notice what he said? This was back in source number 13, the top of page 4. He said, "Mihu pashita ein osrim b'diavad im naflu tocha tafshio." So I want to stop there and pause there, and let's just for us. So I wasted an hour of your time trying to build up a case that this may actually be a legitimate custom, going back. Right, 12th century, 11th century, and possibly going all the way back to the Gemara. It's interesting that it's Tosfot's interpretation of the Gemara, which then is very close to what the Smak is saying in terms of the whole rationale behind this. So it could be, if you ask the Smak, where did you get this from? He would say, well, that's the Gemara. I mean, just look at the Riz, explanation of the Gemara. This is all coming from one school of thought. As I said, possibly going back to the Gemara. From this point onward, I want to now start unraveling this and find where we could nonetheless be lenient. So the first is the Ramah himself. The Ramah in one line says, "V'yesh osrim." We don't use rice. We don't use kidney. And on the top of page 4, right? "V'minig ba'ashkenaz lahachmir." So our custom is not to cook this, not to use these things. "V'ein l'shanot," and don't change it. "Mihu," third line, "pashut." You like the pashut there? This is clear, simple. "V'ein osrim b'diavad im naflu tocha tafshio." B'diavad, we are Mekel. Now, obviously the question over here is going to be is, what does B'diavad mean? I want to go back to the Gra in source 14, where it's bold in the middle of the fourth line, V'haminhag. Next line, sorry. It's our custom, and it gives reasons, sources that once something is a custom, that is the custom. Then, next line, mihu, what was the mihu? B'diavad, we're not, right? We're mekel, right? V'chein, right? D'bahal lo gazrinan v'leka minhag. There was no gzeira, and there is no minhag, in which case, if it fell in already. Now, what exactly did the Gra just now tell us? No. So let's think things through a little bit. If I cook all of my food before Pesach, yes, is there a huge advantage to cooking Pesach food before Pesach? The disadvantage is your children will hate you forever, and you give them bad associations with Pesach. People have told me that their kitchens went over 3 weeks ago. What are you talking about? Okay. By the way, this is very easy for me to say because I'm going away for Pesach. My wife gets a vacation. I have to speak, but she gets a vacation. Don't worry, she's still cleaning her refrigerator. Our neighbor wants to use her refrigerator. I said, "Are you out of your mind?" I said, what are you talking about? She has to do all these things when I'm not looking because else I will make fun of her. So, let's think a second. If I cook my food before Pesach, there's a huge advantage. What's the advantage? Very little can go wrong. Say it. Even better. Chametz before Pesach is not chametz. Chametz on Pesach is chametz. I'm not playing with words now. If a little bit of chametz fell into your soup on Pesach, the whole soup is not kosher Pesach, because chametz is not batel. But if a little bit, chemically, the exact same thing happened before Pesach, I want to stress this. I can have two pots that on a chemical analysis, they are 100% the same. One is 100% chametz, and one is 100% kosher Pesach. Did that make sense? The only difference is the hour that something fell in. Here it fell in on the first day of Pesach. I cooked it in the morning and something, a crumb fell in. And here I cooked it 2 days before Pesach, 100% kosher, because chametz is not batel, but crumbs are batel before Pesach. Okay, good. Now, what if a little kitniot fell in before Pesach? If a little kitniot fell into my thing before Pesach, so what are you going to say? Why? So what do the grudges now say? What do the grudges say? Right, if something fell in, b'diavad, even on Pesach, it's allowed, to halo gozrinin v'leka minhag. There's no custom if something fell in. Im naflu tocha tavshil, there's no minhag about it. So therefore, if chametz falls in on Pesach, batel. If chametz falls in on Pesach, it's not batel d'asor. If chametz fell in before Pesach, it's batel. What if kitniot fell in on Pesach? What did he just now say? It's fine. Now, what if kitniot fell in before Pesach? So, what exactly is a case of bedia? Well, by the way, what if somebody did it on purpose? What if something says on the ingredient that there's some kitniot in here, but it's a mixture of kitniot. It's not pure kitniot. So, what happens with the mixtures of kitniot? Which I know that all the kashrut organizations on the right, the Ochlei kitniot, right, lebovad, and others can't eat it. But what exactly is the Vilna Gaon saying over here? So here's where, and what does b'diavad mean? What does it mean once it's already in? Once it's already in, what do I do? I understand that. I understand that. That's exactly where the point where it's going to get more interesting. In source number...
So it's even if it's before Pesach and it's not
b'diavad, it's fine? You hear I'm going in that direction, don't you? Let's take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. Let's take a look at Mishnah Berurah now. Source 18. The Yesh Osrim, right? Our custom is saying it's not allowed. Lo mikra din el chumra shechmira lehem. So it's interesting. He's saying this is a chumrah. Ze mishum lefamim tfuam urav mine kitniot. Because sometimes they get mixed together. It's more like the Maharil and like the Rakeach. V'yiv shalavur yafir v'ati l'dei chimutz kishi yafam o yivashlam. Because what is our concern? That there may really be chametz there. And sometimes these things do get mixed together. And by the way, that is the mitziyot, that they do get mixed together. Which, by the way, I'll say it again, that may go all the way back to the Gemara, that line. That may go all the way back. There are people like the people that work by the Reish Galuta who don't know how to distinguish. The Ein L'Shanot, this is our custom, let's not. Ein L'Shanot, Afilu Ba'achron Shel Pesach Ein La'Kiel B'Zeh. Why would you think it could be make on the last day of Pesach? That's because the Hasidim who say you can't eat Shruya are make on the last day of Pesach. U'mikom akom b'shat hadchak, She'ein la'adam ma le'echol, Mutar levashel kol aminim chutz mihem minei dagan, mikom makom gam b'kagon zeh yakdim kitniot la'orez v'dochen v'ratshka lahem dom yoter lahem minim v'shayach v'utfei l'migzer. U'poshet tuhu adin l'chol af she'ein bo sakana d'mutar lo levashel lo im tzorech l'zeh. So the Mishnah Berurah, again, who's generally a machmir posek, if indeed this is a sefer of Pesach, he just now told you that if there's somebody who doesn't have what to eat, by the way, I would be very willing to say that that's the case by vegetarians, or that's the case by people who what is it? Macrobiotics? I don't know. Macrobiotics? I don't know what they eat. But no, people who have limited diets, who they eat grains, that's what they eat. Sorry, grains. They eat kidney oat. So what did he just now say? He said, b'shat hadchak. So the whole question is, what is a shat hadchak? But next he said, chole she'ein bo sakana. A chole she'ein bo sakana is not pikuach nefesh and is not a chole who's in bed. Chole she'ein bo sakana is a relatively low category. And right there again, he said, rice is the last thing that I would allow. But all these other things, and by the way, look at the way he said it. U'pashutu adin l'chole she'ein bo sakana. And it's certainly the case by somebody who's chole she'ein bo sakana. Could, right? Chet im naflu. Right, if it fell in, right, if you can see them. So all that you need to make sure in terms of where the gross of b'diavad. See, b'diavad is very interesting what it means. It means after the fact. So after the fact, as long as it's not the main ingredient, it's batel berov. So I'm going to say this again. This becomes very interesting by all these products that are kosher to Pesach. You say, no, they're kidney oat in them, we can't eat them. But if it's not the first ingredient, right? What's the first ingredient in bamba? Corn. And what's the second ingredient, most likely? Peanuts, yeah. So that's not going to, I'm not going to find a, yeah, that's going to be really hard to find a heter. But other things, b'diavad, after the fact, you know, I'm not sure how far I want to push this. Dimkol mikvei taruvot, right. So let's try another thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a question here regarding peanuts. 19, regarding peanuts. Are you allowed to eat peanuts on Pesach? Be'inyan peanut, be'mir sheshat iser min ha-kitniot. Yinei b'dover peanut shekatavti shebehar b'mekamot ha-achlotam be'pesach. Right, chvod torato v'chulei tama b'tama davar, mishum sheshema she'osim imenu be'ezem makom gam kemach, v'gam shemesh nizrim b'sedot kishar kitniot. Avol yoda chvodo she'ein ze inyan klal shekol dvim ha'osim mim kemach. Right, sorry, shekol dvim ha'osim mim kemach nasru b'minag zeh de'in lecha davar osim imenu kemach tapuchei adama lo rak b'midinat zeh ela gam b'Europe b'mekotein v'gam b'dorat hakodmim v'olam lochashu le'iser zeh. By the way, that's not exactly true. There were those who said, hold it, if our problem is confusion, then you can get confused with potato flour. There was, the Chai Adam wanted to not allow potatoes because of this. And this was back in the day when they only ate meat and potatoes, and somebody very cynically said to him, if you don't allow potatoes, they're not going to call your book the Chai Adam, then you can call the book the Mitat Adam, because you're going to kill off all the Jews, because they will have nothing left to eat. So there were those who, but Rav Moshe is saying, what are you talking about? Nobody ever questioned. It's true, the Chai Adam, and there were others who said, hold it, if I can get confused, of course you get confused by potato flour. I mean, I love the brownies for Pesach, right? You have to ask, what bracha do you make on those? Is that a shakol? So the shakol, so what really is it? It's chocolate-flavored potatoes, right? It doesn't sound good, but it really is. Rav Moshe is saying, no, nobody ever dreamt to aser it, so obviously you see he's being makel. Skip down to where it's underlined again. L'chein ein lanu b'davar ela mashi mafurish shenogu le'isu v'chein mashi yodeh mufursam v'gam yesh l'tein tam didan mashi nesu b'minag ha'ein ze davar nesar b'kivutz chachamim ela shen higu et ha'am la'achmir shelo l'chol minim elu shi yumatzoi la'ochum right? B'bnei ha'tamim d'chashash minei dagan shen tavru shakashu l'vdok m'nei sha'osin k'machim. He says there was never a group of rabbis who got together and said, you can't do this, but this was the custom which we had. Because there never was a group of rabbis who got together. The only things which are not allowed are the things which they had a custom not to allow. Az mitzuyan az shalakach tapuchoy dama shalom yu mitzuyim az ki yadu v'lo enhigu memele la osram einom bichlali isur de elu minim shenagula sur af sheyesh otam atam amash te ein lemilaf minhag and so on and so forth. What is he saying? That the only things not allowed in the minhag of kitniot are things which they originally had the custom of not to allow. And Rav Moshe will go on to say we should not add new things to the list. Next line, next page. L'chein chachmei adarot ha'achonim lo ratzu lausif lasur afa min shenitzu achakach rak she'i efshar latir ma'ashe kfar nagu li'isur. what was the custom not to do, we have our custom, we don't add new things, and so on. Uvamalkum shaleika minhag, ein la asur kidvarm ke'elu ein la achmir kide'ita bechok. Yaakov la'elu sheish la minhag, b'yichud shalal l'chol peanut, asur gam b'peanut, aval misafik ein la asur. Basically he says, I remember in Europe they ate them, so it must be allowed. What's included? The things that they had. By the way, this opinion of Rav Moshe is, I don't want to say it's problematic, but I do want to say, for certainly the Chassidim don't accept it. What is it that he said? He said, whatever was included in the custom is included in the custom. We don't take the principle of the custom and apply new things, but whatever they included. So, therefore, quinoa. Quinoa, there was never included. I'll get to corn. It was never, quinoa was never included in the custom, so therefore, when it was finally discussed, what is it exactly? It's a vegetable. I mean, personally, I don't think it's roi l'achila, but whatever. You have, I know. My wife thinks it's also great, but I said, it has no taste by itself. You have to put something on it. It's like man. Okay, it's like man. Do you make sushi out of it? You can do chunk. Okay. So when quinoa first hit the market, so people asked, so this was my approach, follower of Moshe. Don't apply it to new things. I'm going back to canola now. Canola was used, I told you earlier, the oil was used for machines. It was never used to eat. You don't eat the rapeseed, and the oil was never used. They found some new way of making the oil edible. So again, this is like within our lifetimes that this started to be used. So it was never included in the minhag. Rape seeds were never included in the minhag. They never didn't eat it, so therefore it's allowed to be. And that would be the approach. The big question over here would be things like soy and things like corn. So, for example, Rav Dov Lior, he allowed all those things for Rav Moshe's argument. Anything that wasn't included. Corn, the problem was it hit Europe at a much earlier stage, and people included it in the custom. Which means if Rav Moshe would have been there that day, he would have said, stop, don't include corn. And obviously our lives would be very different. But Rav Moshe's approach really very much in this is, it goes back to the Ramah. What was the minhag? What did they do? So he remembers in Europe they ate peanuts. In Europe they didn't eat corn. So that would be as simple as it could possibly be. Yeah, Rav Moshe allowed peanuts, allowed peanut oil. Excuse me? I never have, but I would not argue. I would not argue with Rav Moshe on this. What are you saying? Unless somebody specifically had a custom not to, or then it should certainly be allowed. And that, I think, is completely accepted. By the way, part of my reason for allowing canola is because of the health concerns. You compare this with some of the oils that people are using on Pesach, and it's frightening. It's things that really should be for machinery. I do want to read Source 20 because it's very important. Source 20 is Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector. He is what today they would call the Posek. He was the Posek Hador. And he here speaks about kitniot and says the minhag was kitniot, but was never oil from kitniot. Nobody ever asked the oil. That's Rav Yitzchak Chanan. Nobody ever asked the oil. So if you want to go back, so according to...
You can't make bread from
right. Right, he says that was never. He goes, go back and look at all the sources. Nobody said anything about oil. People were saying that people were saying is that people got confused. But the oil, whoever answered the oil. Look 2/3 of the way down. V'kivin d'mavuar b'chok Yaakov. D'tarovet rov lo gazru b'kitnio demkein huadin b'irvo b'mechuvan. Ulamid bitam gamur gamken mutadoz linen butter ta'amad machmat aleka karet lo gozrube vahua din beze. He just now said, if you mixed it on purpose, it's a mixture. And like you read, you say, like, what do you. Of kitniot, as long as it's not the rove. It's sort of what we saw in the grub before, the same kind of approach is that if it's not. Bidiyavad is after the fact. And he gives all kinds of reasons to be mekel. By the way, in Source 21 of Tzvi Pesach Frank writes, "B'shem Rav Chaim Salavechik." This is Rav Chaim Brisk. Hinei Hashem and Niskamut al Pesach when Nase Bezirut of Hechsher. V'chein Shemati Mi Rav Agon Rav Moshe Pritzker B'shem Agon Rav Chaim Salavechik and Brisker. Who itirid ze l'chaga Pesach? V'chein Yesh Lakal B'shem in ze Yotu Mishem Nase Mi Pis. I don't know what that is, but again, allowing. No, canola, corn oil. Corn oil or things like that, yeah. Allowing other things. So let me go back for a second. Most of the things today that say on them, lochle kitney oil, you have to be careful. If it's rice and it says lochle kitney oil, so I don't believe you can use it. If it says lochle liftit, liftit is rapeseed. Yes, liftit is rapeseed, and therefore it's the canola, and therefore all the chocolate and all these things which say lochle liftit, I would allow all of those things, especially you buy it before Pesach. If it's not the main ingredient, it's the second ingredient. This is b'diavad. No. So I'm saying, right. So you buy something, as long as it's not the first ingredient, I'm already telling you that when it comes to something where the problem was an oil or something like that, there are so many reasons to be makel on this, because again, just combining all the things that I've already said, and it's not even that somebody's being cynical, and they're not doing it for Ashkenazim. They think they're doing it for Sfaradim, but it's b'diavad now. It's already made. So is this allowed? Yeah, the answer is yeah. This is allowed. And I know that this may sound very strange in light of everything that we've seen till now, but what we saw till now is where it's the main ingredient, which means it's the main ingredient is the kidney oat, and that's where they said it can't be used. But when it's mixed into something else, now again, I do want to be clear. If you go back to the rationale of the rokeach or of the maharil, because there may be chametz mixed inside, that's right, then it becomes quite problematic, which is why, chametz is batel before Pesach, which is why I would say that any of these things should have a hechsher for Pesach, should have a hechsher, but you're right, even if there was some kind of a takala, so before Pesach, it would have been batel. So therefore, when it comes, if you want to know my thoughts on all of this, when it comes to, you know, rice and it comes to kidney out themselves, I don't see a way for Ashkenazim to make it. When I look, and I think this is actually an older custom than most people imagine, perhaps going all the way back to the times of the Gemara, that's what emerges from at least Tosfot's understanding of the Gemara. It could go all the way back because people could get confused. That's exactly the rationale of the smak, and now we see that was a Gemara. On the other hand, it could be the result, and this is a second reason, which is not necessarily an independent reason, because maybe they actually grew these things together, so there may really be chametz with inside, so that's obviously going to be a concern. So I don't see how to be mako on those kinds of things. But on the other hand, when it comes to oils, when it comes to mixtures, when it comes to any new products, all of those, there is room to be mako. So do I go as far as Rav Lior and therefore say, using Rav Moshe's argument, that anything which was not known by the smak is not included? I feel a little uncomfortable going that far. Essentially, I feel uncomfortable undoing traditions that were done. That's really what my feeling is. But if anything new is going to come to the market, I can tell you right now that something new that no one ever dreamed of before, no one ate before, they find something in the Amazon, whatever it is, I will then use this approach of Rav Moshe. You know, it's enough what we already have the custom of not using, and we're not going to add it to any new kinds of products. And the problem with the corn and the soy, at least my opinion, is that the custom has included those things as well. So let's say the Eda HaChared will say, yeah, but that's true of peanuts, and that's true of corn, and that's true of everything. And I would argue, as I said, the most exciting thing halachically for me would really be those two products, would be the canola on the one hand and the quinoa on the other hand, because those are both in our lifetime entered into the market, and both of those things, I very, very early on when I was asked about them. Look, the big question with quinoa, what is it? Right? As long as you get the botanist to tell you, this is not one of the five grains, that would be the only concern. Is this some kind of strange kusmin or some kind of strange chita that we're not aware of? Once we're told it's not one of the five grains, so that's it. Then it will be allowed. And as I said, the canola would be new, even though the rape seeds were known. It was never eaten, so it was never custom not to eat it. So that's a little trickier in terms of the halacha, because it didn't come from some new world. It was just a new way of making it. But when you get to the Gra, and then when you get even to the Mishnah Brewer, I think you're a little surprised to see the leniencies that were there, where the Mishnah Brewer is saying, you know, if there's b'shat etchak. But again, let's be honest about the b'shat etchak. Living in Radin, where, you know, they did not have that many products. We have much, much more products today. But on the other hand, we're much more spoiled than they were. So therefore, it goes back to what I said.
I'm surprised to hear you say, like, if you're a vegetarian, it's hard. It's unhealthy. It's like I'm eating eggs and cheese all the time.
Right. So
there's plenty of food. It's not like...
Right. So that's exactly where the tension is. On the one hand, we have so much more to eat than they had. And when he talks about Shat HaDchak, I'm just trying to imagine what it was like, you know, in early Pesach, you're still in the winter in some place in White Russia. And there are, I remember when I visited Russia in 1985, and we were visiting Refuseniks. I was there when Sharansky was released. And we're visiting Refuseniks, and somebody brought us over this thing which was brown. I had no idea what it was. Like, what is it? It's an orange. You could not tell it was an orange. And then this was 1985. So you can just imagine, when he's a Shat HaDchak, it's not exactly what we imagine Shat HaDchak, but I'll say the other factor is that we're spoiled, and that's why there are people fighting to allow kidney out completely, because 1 week without having chumos, you know, we may all die. So, you know, we listen, it could be pekuach nefesh, so we have to really be careful about that. But then you realize chol she'ein bo sakana, so that takes you right into this health concern. So, you know, people, I'm very easy on these things when people will call me and say, you know, I have this and this health, so okay, seder, that's shat hadchak, that's a health concern or whatever. I'm very easy on those kinds of things. But again, somebody eats a normal diet, so, you know, having meat and potatoes for a week doesn't sound to me to be the worst thing that ever happened. But the oils, as I said, you have already reasons to be lenient on this. The mixtures, you have reason to be. Mixtures of oils. Mixtures means that there's a product of something which may have been kidney out, which is inside the mixture. So there.
It's like dairy products also.
What's in dairy products? Right. So it could be all kind of things like that. That just strikes you. What are you talking about? There's kidney out in there. So all those kinds of things, I'm far less. That gra, again, should we read that gra again? That gra is just really interesting, the way he phrased it. Again, he's going off the words of the Rama. The words were, Pashut, de'eno srim b'diyavadu, naflu toch ha'tavshil. So now you can say, what does this mean? Nafal l'toch. The guy put it in. He made it. He cooked it like this. And there, but when the Gra then says, de'bahalo gazrinan v'leika minhag, there's no gzerah, there's no minhag, and then you realize that he's talking about issues of mixtures and whatever, so then you realize, hold it, maybe this minhag is not as broad, according to the Gra, that we would have thought before. So I'll say it again. Once, and no pun intended, I have a mixture of reasons, this, I have the canola mixed, the rapeseed mixed in the chocolate with this, and that's a mixture, and it's not the main ingredient, it's a second, but it says on it, Ashkenazim can't eat this, slicha. And by the way, they're more careful with that. They don't write Ashkenazim can't eat it. What did they say? La'ochle, Jenny lifted, but some things could say la'ochle kitniot, and then you start reading it, and it's okay. A very sweet kid who's comes from a broken home, and his, you know, his parents divorced years ago, and he's with his grandmother, and he goes, my father's custom is not to kidney. My grandmother bought something, and I can't eat it, right? So I said, tell me what it says. So he told me what it said. I said, send me the picture. He sent me the picture. I said, Rav Yitzchak Ochanan, the Vilna Gaon said you can eat this. So, I think you can eat it. Certainly when you're with your grandmother, you can eat this. And again, that's where we need to be careful. So, you know, the balance over here is very interesting. You have the Maharil saying, you know, God forbid to be makel on this, whoever's makel on this, that's it. But again, makel on what? Makel on what? Makel on eating kidney, which means you can't have a bowl of rice. You can't make, again, a thing of hummus or whatever. These things, where the custom of the Ashkenazim is to be machmir, and I don't see how to move away from that. But on the other hand, once I move to the oils, I move to the mixtures, I move to the other areas, I see a lot of room over there for leniency. And again, it could be, you'll have to show me the exact ingredient, what it is we're looking at, but as I said, there is an awful lot of room over here to lenient. And those words of the Rama, b'diavad, once there's a mixture, b'diavad, after this happened, we're not machmir. Again, that means it's not the main ingredient. Because if it's the main ingredient, so then that's the main ingredient. But if it's not the main ingredient, that's where the Gra said, sorry, ein gzera, ein minhag. So now you'll ask me, but the guy did it on purpose when he made it. Yeah, well, ein gzera, ein minhag. So I'm going to buy it in the store, or it's already in my house, and I read what it says on it. It's not the first ingredient, it's the third ingredient. So the Vilna Gaon would say, yeah, zebediavad, zemutar, ein gzera, ein minhag. So as I said, that may have surprised you. So I surprised you in both ways, right? I surprised you on how old and how strict the minhag was on the one hand, but on how lenient we can possibly go on the other hand. Good, that's my job. Chag kasher v'sameach.